Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
We have talked about it endlessly over the last decade or so, and we've accomplished close to zip.
We know enough about our climate problem to know that it's serious and that we need to get started right away.
What we're seeing right now is a clear loading of the weather dice.
There's been a lot of hand-wringing from climate scientists and others about the election of Donald Trump, but a story in the New York Times this week suggests that the president-elect may have a tougher time affecting climate policy and renewable energy policy than he thinks. Indeed, the Times journalist writes, despair may be an overreaction. NPR meteorologist Paul Huttner is with me in the studio. Paul, you have been one of those who's pretty concerned about the effect that the Trump administration may have on climate policy. You read this article. What'd you think?
Well, and like we've talked about before, Carrie, I think that U.S. policy is only one element in where the rubber meets the road with climate change. You know, there's politics, there's policy, and there's emissions. And many things besides policy drive the emissions scenario and the atmospheric response to that. So, you know, Trump administration, just one part of what drives U.S. emissions, and even smaller part globally. There's market forces, there's coal versus gas, there's the renewable energy boom. That train has already sort of left the station,
right,
picking up speed.
Right.
So I think there's only so much Trump can do in terms of climate policy. And of course, the big wild card is jobs. Renewable energy jobs are growing at 20% a year in the solar sector. So
he's not going to want to turn his back on that.
You wouldn't, right, think so.
Okay, let's bring in Jody Freeman on. This is a good place to do it. She's director of Harvard's Environmental Law and Policy Program, and she's with us today from L.A. Jody, welcome back to the show. It's really good to have you back on the show.
Great to be with you.
The Times article seems to suggest, as Paul alluded to, that the private market on renewable energy is thriving. And it's without a lot of input or necessary subsidies or investment from the federal government. Give us a reality check on that. Where's it at?
Paul's right about the idea that the surge in renewable energy isn't going to end, I think, anytime soon. And the problem, though, is it is partly because of federal subsidies. And I think that the real risk here is if the Congress were to eliminate some of the federal tax credits that really help to boost wind and solar energy. So there really are some policy drivers that are at risk with the Republican Congress, but I think there's reason to be optimistic because you see many members of Congress from states with big, you know, wind and solar power potential that don't want to see those subsidies go anywhere anytime soon.
I looked up the top 10 states that are producing the most renewable energy. This is interesting. Half of them are run by Republican governors. So it sounds like the states have already decided they can't be on the sidelines of this.
I think that's right. I think any time the federal government recedes, if that's what we're about to witness, that they take a step back from promoting policies that will be good for dealing with climate change and good for promoting a shift to clean energy, anytime we see the federal government step back, I think we hope, we wait to see the states fill the gap. I think you're going to see some states be very active in promoting renewables. But there is something else that's important to point out. It's not like the federal government doesn't matter here for addressing climate change. It's not like things will be all just fine if the Trump administration goes in a radically different direction from the Obama administration. You know, they can make a big difference by setting a tone internationally. The president-elect has said that he's looking at the Paris Agreement, and it will make a big difference to the momentum of that international agreement on climate change if the U.S. decides it doesn't want to play a leadership role. And likewise, domestically, if the new Trump administration and the Republican Congress want to roll back, rescind the Clean Power Plan to clean the electricity grid, that will make a big difference because it will really stall the momentum shifting out of coal and into cleaner energy sources.
Jody, Paul Huttner here. Let's talk about coal and natural gas for a minute. Obviously, market forces in the last several years have favored natural gas, and coal has sort of been left behind in this energy transition. I mean, my assessment is I don't see the market forcing a big rush back to coal. What do you think about that?
I think you're right, Paul, that, you know, gas has overtaken coal largely because it's just cheaper. And so you see a shift. Now, I think for the first time, we have coal playing a bigger share of our energy supply for electricity, natural gas, rather than coal. That's a real transition. But the thing is, it's not locked in. And we all know that if natural gas prices rise, the momentum could shift somewhat back to coal. And the benefit of the federal regulations that are trying to drive change in the sector is they're meant to lock in that shift away from coal and toward natural gas. I do think you're right, though. Coal jobs are declining. They have been declining for decades. Clean energy jobs are on the rise and dwarf coal jobs. And I think that's likely the direction that we'll continue to go in.
Yeah, and, you know, interesting, too, you talked about the states. States like California have a big investment in tech and renewable jobs. We've even heard some fighting words from folks in California, like the governor saying, hey, if they try to mess with our approach to climate policy here, we're going to sue them in court. What power do the states have to be a check, legally speaking, on a Trump administration policy with regard to climate change?
Well, you're right. The states are really gearing up, some of them, but especially California. I think what they are planning to do is challenge the Trump administration and the Congress if they start rolling back regulations that are going to have a negative effect on the states. It's not like the president can come into office and with the stroke of a pen eliminate environmental protection rules. There's a legal process you have to go through. You have to rescind a rule properly. There are steps you have to follow, and you have to replace those rules with something else if the Clean Air Act or the Clean Water Act requires an agency to set some standards. You can't just eliminate things and not replace them with anything else. So I think you're going to see the states playing a watchdog role, launching lawsuits to say, you know, that the administration has done things unlawfully, that they've been arbitrary in trying to roll back some of these Obama-era regulations. And they'll be playing a very important role, primarily, I think, in litigation in the courts. You'll see a lot of activity trying to resist rollback in the courts.
Jody Freeman is with us for the Climate Cast. She's director of the Harvard Law School Environmental Law and Policy Program, and talking to us this morning about some of the impact that the Trump administration can have on climate policy and renewable energy policy. Jody, I think the last time that you were here, we talked about the Clean Power Plan, and I had read that piece you wrote in Politico, and I went back to look at it. Again, you were talking about the court challenges to it.
Yes.
Can President Trump reverse a lot of the Clean Power Plan with executive orders?
He can't do it with an executive order. He can announce that he will. He can sign an executive order saying, I intend to do that.
Okay.
But he has to use his Environmental Protection Agency to follow a legal process if he wants to rescind the Clean Power Plan, because it's already been finalized, so it's a legally binding rule. There are two possibilities here. One is that the courts will decide that the Clean Power Plan is perfectly lawful and uphold it. It's right now before the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. They haven't ruled yet. And if they uphold it, then the new Trump administration has to decide what to do. And it could actually decide it's going to replace that rule with something much weaker. And that will take some time, maybe a year or two even.
If
the court were to strike it down and basically invalidate the Clean Power Plan, then, of course, there would be an appeal to the Supreme Court, and the supporters of the plan, the states and environmental groups that support the plan, would appeal to the Supreme Court, and then we'd have to wait and see what the Supreme Court would do. And, of course, as you know, we're waiting for a ninth justice to be appointed. So we have a lot of uncertainty before us. I think the bottom line is, if this administration wants to do away with the Clean Power Plan, they can. It's just going to take them a lot of time, and there'll probably be trench warfare over it.
Do you get you mentioned the EPA. Do you get the idea that this is going to be a very different activist kind of EPA than the kind of activism that we saw in the Obama administration?
Yeah, I think it will be the opposite of activism in the sense that there will be an effort to deregulate and to roll
back. But that's activist in and of itself, isn't it?
I guess that's right. It's in a different direction. Look, the facts are pretty sobering here. If you look at the nominees for the most important posts on energy, environment, protection of natural resources. And if you look at who Trump has appointed, we have Rick Perry at the Department of Energy, Scott Pruitt at the Environmental Protection Agency, and Ryan Zinke at the Department of the Interior. These agencies are science-based agencies that are bound to protect the environment, protect the public lands, and the Department of Energy is the primary funder of R&D on renewable energy and all kinds of other energy. And all three of these nominees have said that the climate science isn't settled. That's pretty alarming for the people who are supposed to be running the lead agencies of the United States government on environment and climate issues.
Jody, thank you so much again. It's really good to have your experience and your insight for our ClimateCast.
My pleasure.
Thanks,
Jody Freeman is director of the Harvard Law School Environmental Law and Policy Program. Paul, what else are you watching when it comes to climate science this week?
And on that note of denying accepted climate science, this sort of falls under the category of Merry Christmas or Your Tax Dollars at Work from our neighbors in Wisconsin.
Okay.
This was reported in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, among many other outlets, Carrie. The Wisconsin DNR, and you can choose your adjective here, suppressed, deleted, censored, basic climate science from their website regarding the Great Lakes and climate change. They did it on December 21st, just before Christmas. What they did was they scrubbed all climate change-related wording on their DNR Great Lakes website. They deleted accepted climate science, removed all reference to greenhouse gases, human-caused climate change, and global temperature rises. It also removed the words climate change and climate from the website. Deleted the phrase scientists agree. Deleted effects.
At the direction of, do we know?
We don't know.
Okay.
I mean, I haven't seen
that
in any of the
Walker
right.
or
I haven't seen that in any of the reporting yet specifically who directed that. But, you know, the news site says that the reasons for Earth going through a change are being debated. That's provably false.
Yep.
I mean, that with a high degree of scientific certainty. So Wisconsin, the third fastest warming state in the nation, sort of checking out on climate change on the DNR website. And, you know, folks like me look at that as a scientist and assess and ask the question, you know, is that a government censorship of climate science?
Do you remember when this happened in Florida?
Yes.
Paul, I mean, Florida,
yes.
Seeing the consequences of climate change right in front of them every single day.
Right.
And luckily, there's a lot of sources of information about climate science.
There are.
Right?
There are. And it'll be interesting to see if there's any legal ramifications with, you know, the natural resources being a constitutional part of owned by all the citizens, if, you know, this kind of thing has any reverberations. But keep an eye on the climate change wording on your local DNR
website. Keep them
honest.
That's right. And then go to there. As Paul and I are saying, there's so many places to get good, valid, solid information about climate science.
That's right.
Don't make it one source.
Absolutely.
Right? All right, Paul. Good to see you. Thanks very much.
You too, Carrie. Thanks.
And if you want to hear more conversations about climate science, subscribe to our ClimateCast podcast. You can find that at nprnews.org. You can search NPR News with Carrie Miller, and it'll come up under, I think, the heading there as well, and all the climate science you could ever want.